Hello and welcome to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. I'm Damien Christie.
And I'm Russell Brown.
On today's show, this is the Christmas edition, our last for the year, so we discuss the big national and international events with comedians Jeremy Elwood and Michelle Acourt.
Then we look at the year in culture with Craig Ramapier.
Producer Tom Watts finds out what it takes to put on a good New Year's party.
And we play you our pick for the Christmas number one from Avalanche City.
Well, joining us to discuss the year's events this week, two of our best, two of our finest, Michelle Acourt and Jeremy Elwood. Welcome.
Hello.
Nice to be here.
The biggest event, well, arguably, one of the biggest events in New Zealand this year was the Christchurch earthquake. Who's from Christchurch? Anyone?
I was born there. Oh, not born there. I lived there for a long time as a child.
Yes.
And I flattered with you there.
Yes. And I met... let's not go into that. I was actually down in Christchurch just recently, and there's still a lot of stuff unfixed there, but it's the abandoned houses in Avonside that are kind of scary.
Yeah.
People still can't... In the rest of the country, we're kind of done with that, but they're not done with it down there.
So are people still waiting to know whether their house is going to be demolished or fixed?
Yeah. Oh, no, people, yeah, they've all got their notices. My friends have got a green notice, but you stand in the middle of their hallway and the house slopes away from you in all sorts of directions. It's kind of...
Wow.
That really brought it home to me. It's like a big fist came out and twisted their house.
Wow. It sounds like some student flats I lived in Wellington. You just get used to it, I think. You pay slightly less for it.
I was down there last week as well, and yeah, you go in going, oh yeah, they had the earthquake, but then you see, you know, most of Manchester Street is still closed off to general traffic, and we're actually both down there for the Buskers Festival at the end of January, and we've been given a contract which says aftershocks are still happening, but what you should do if you're on stage is keep an eye on the locals. If they panic, you should panic. But if they don't, they're just used to it, so just carry on with your
show. Take a breath and ignore it. I've got a friend who says she won't get out of bed for anything less than a 5.6, which is amazing, really, because she'd get into bed for 3 gin. So,
how are they dealing with the aftershocks down there?
By taking bets on them to try and make it entertainment, which is kind of cool. Everybody gets in touch with each other and says, I reckon that was in Dunsandel 2 kilometres down, and it was probably a 4.3. And so you lay money on that and then find out from the website, GeoNet or whatever it is, to find out if you're right or not.
I'm quite pleased that you look at God looked after the churches not nearly as well as he did look after the Southern Hemisphere's finest whiskey store, Whiskey Galore. They lost 2 bottles.
Oh, well, there you go. There is a
the churches are all lying all over the place.
Yes. The one story I think that we all hoped was going to end up with some miracle silver lining, of course, turned into the biggest tragedy of the year. In fact, in many years, our greatest loss of life since Erebus, Pike River. Even this week, the bad news continues. The redundancies, the mines in receivership, which I think, Russell, you sort of predicted from the outset, from the time that the explosion first happened, that was going to be the end of Pike River. It's an ongoing situation. Obviously, we don't know when the bodies, such as they are going to be retrieved.
It's going to be a story that goes on for a long time too, and it feels like there's going to be layers and layers like an onion peeled back to find out what was really going on in the mine before all of this happened. There's a whole bunch of issues.
And we're going to have, I think, was it 3 inquiries?
Yes, and then there's obviously the government's announced who's going to be on the Royal Commission. There's some pretty heavyweights on that. Predictions, I mean, my prediction is that some of the people that were the heroes at the time won't be so heroic in retrospect.
I think some of that's starting to happen.
Mm. I was surprised, and I don't want to prejudge what's going to come out, but that Mr. Whittle, you know, and obviously he hadn't been there particularly long, but in the end, mine management came out of the whole situation looking quite heroic, and it seems like there may have been a lot of problems going on with that mine for a long time.
Well, I think one of the things that worked very well for them at the time was that they were really quite happy. I've said this on other medium. They were very happy to say when they didn't know something. I felt that really helped them at the time because people just felt they were being truthful. But as these inquiries continue and as more questions get asked, that's not going to cut it anymore. When you have a Royal Commission, people expect it to get answers.
And sometimes not knowing is actually not that good. If you don't know the answers, well, it's like, well, why not?
Yep.
That's obviously, I mean, the coast is going to be changed forever. And I think as that bad news continues, the economic, trickle down, it's not going to be great down there for quite some time. It's been a year of big scandals, events. As the lid has been lifted on our political spending, it's caused a few casualties. Pansy Wong, Chris Carter. I mean, Chris Carter's still there, obviously, but hanging on. David Garrett gone, not for scandals, but for other reasons.
Well, I think that's it. The spending was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
The spending was sort of opened this whole kind of honesty and revelation about people's past. And David Garrett, where did that come from? That was an incredible story.
This is the old rule that it's not what you did, it's the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And the lying often about it.
And the trying to defend the indefensible. There's a couple of other examples. You know, we've got Andy Hayden and Paul Henry as well, who tried to defend some indefensible things this year. But David Garrett was the
Well, I think Garth McVicar defending David Garrett.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he really picks him, doesn't he, Garth McVicar?
Oh, he really does. I mean, letting the guy who killed the tagger, that was another one that Garth McVicar, his true colours came blazing through that story, I think.
A friend of mine, to quote my friend John Johansson, he says that what we're seeing now is the growing pains of a move towards transparency. It was interesting when Lockwood Smith tried to reverse the transparency and say, OK, we're not going to look at those MPs' expenses anymore. That didn't wash, and I think it was John Key in the end said, oh, yes, we will.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we will.
Yeah.
And actually, we should thank the Greens for that. They are the ones who actually kicked this off and shamed everyone else. So.
Yeah, I'm always wary, and having been, you know, worked at TVNZ this year, wary of what transparency. You know, you've got to view things relatively speaking, so that what looks like bad on paper for a CEO to be spending, unless you compare it, and the Herald are awful at not doing this, unless you compare it with the head of Telecom and the head of Vodafone and the head of various organisations. Out of context, $30,000 on travel or whatever might look like a hell of a lot.
Absolutely.
And people end up making knee-jerk reactions.
Well, and part of democracy is that we want our politicians to turn up where they need to be. And if that means they have to get on flights a lot, absolutely cool.
And, of course, the other one that really amplifies the word spending is if you put credit card before it. And the Herald did that all year. In most cases, it's an accounting device. I mean, we had John Banks saying, I don't have a Merrill credit card. Turned out that his assistant did and used it all the time. It's kind of ridiculous.
The Herald on the TVNZ staff spending, effectively ran a campaign that meant that all the TVNZ staff got their credit cards taken off them. The Herald ran the follow-up story, the TVNZ staff will no longer be able to splurge on their credit cards.
Yeah.
No evidence that there was any splurging, and as someone who has worked there and used to have a credit card, splurging stopped years ago when Ralston left the building. Not saying it was him doing it, but we all did it when he was there. And it's just what's happened now is it's just a lot harder to do your job. If you go away on a trip and you've got to pay for your accommodation, you've got to put it on your own credit card, which personally I find a little bit immoral, a big company expecting its staff to basically fund its operation.
Yeah, you don't need to be a CAO to use a credit card as a business tool. That's what it's there for. It's
The reports of Rick Ellis, the CEO, spending on his credit card, and then you had to drill down and find out that actually a fair chunk of that was some office computers he'd bought because they were needed urgently. So it's not all luxury. And hookers and blow, and you know.
The liquor licensing and alcohol laws are in the spotlight. It's going to be an ongoing. This is going to be something that's obviously going to carry on next year. It's not going to come in until after the Rugby World Cup. But your thoughts on what the government decided to do, the split age?
I'm disturbed about the idea that my 18-year-old daughter can go to a bar and drink, but she can't bring me a bottle of wine home. Very upsetting.
And I do like the point you just made, which is it's not going to come into effect until after the Rugby World Cup. Mm. I mean, that to me is such a cynical way of doing it. It just going, oh, well, we don't want to complicate. We want as many people to be able to drink at the Rugby World Cup as possible, but then after that, we'll start clamping down.
Whereas we've been able to do all kinds of law changes in time for the Rugby World Cup, where it suits the government. It's been a really nice little deadline pusher, hasn't it, for a few things?
I think if the government was, you know, was a high class escort with the Hobbit executives, I think she's a Tupney whore for the Rugby World Cup. I mean, the idea that we have these problems at Eden Park because people are throwing plastic bottles, but for the Rugby World Cup, Heineken are going to be providing cans.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, awesome. It's the things that we're doing, the amount of money we're spending. Yeah. God, it better be worthwhile.
Oh, I think the Rugby World Cup next year is going to be, it will be the story of the year, but probably not for the reasons that people are predicting.
And along with a lot of other people, I'm hoping I'll be able to read about it on the internet because I won't actually be in the country at the time.
Now, this year, definitely, you'd have to be asleep to not notice that. We've got a super city, for those of us who live in Auckland, and a super mayor. What your judgment on Len Brown's first couple of months?
Well, I don't think to date he hasn't done a lot. There's announcements going to be coming out this week about what he's spending. What are they saying, $2.4 billion or something on spending? I may have that figure wrong.
Rates rise is about 5%.
Rates rise is heading towards 5%. I think, personally, I think the super city is a good idea. but I think it's going to have massive teething problems. Again, I think that's something they rushed through because they wanted to have it in place before the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, you watch out for the IT systems, the merged IT systems of the councils. Yeah. There's all sorts of nasty surprises in there. Don't envy Len Brown in that. But I think he's been really sure-footed since election, actually.
What was it, 100 policies in 100 days?
Yeah.
I think the first thing that one of the first things he should have done was rename Great North Road, because it doesn't go north at all. Great West Road. I mean,
Len, if you're listening, there you go. There's a suggestion.
And then follow it up with New North Road, because that also goes west. I don't understand either of these road names. That's just a small annoyance that's really started to bug me. It's going to be interesting to see, as you say, Russell, with all these IT systems coming together. But I think ultimately that will be a good thing, because one of the things that annoyed me with all the five different cities was the fact that restaurant ratings, you know, the health ratings and things like that, you'd look at five different council websites that all have different rankings, sure. That sort of stuff, made it very hard to actually get any good data.
The other one's going to be roading. I was talking to a taxi driver yesterday, and the fact that there's, you know, different rules on transit lanes in different parts of the city for taxis. They're allowed to use the North Shore, but not the city ones. So once they manage to merge all of that stuff, but that'll take time.
And maybe buses and trains and boats will all meet each other on a similar timetable. That would be quite awesome also.
Mm. I am quite hopeful about the Auckland Council, though. I like the look of the council. It seems quite practical.
Yeah.
They seem like pragmatic people.
Yeah, I agree.
The biggest, I'll posit, the biggest victory for democracy, for the voice of the people over the government this year was the mining. When mining was one of those theoretical things we thought about before the Pike River.
Yeah, before
crisis,
we knew about
obviously.
People who actually went down them. Yeah.
What do you think about that? The big marches, were you part of any of those?
No, I wasn't, but not because I didn't care, but probably because I was doing something else at the time. But I always think that it was all smoke and mirrors, wasn't it, on the government's part?
We're
going to mine all
was,
kinds of places.
Was
and,
so weak.
Yeah.
The Great Barrier one in particular, to me, seemed like such an obvious sort of little feeder to John Banks, just to say, hey, you stand up for this issue, it'll make it look, I mean, as it happens, it didn't work for him, he still lost, but...
Yeah, I thought that at the time, I thought that maybe this was going to be the one that they throw up, so, you know, the straw man, effectively, like, you get that, because Nikki Kaye was allowed to stand up against it as well.
Yeah.
But I actually think that they were seriously thinking about all these places, and if the public had said, yeah, fair enough, whatever... Not where we live.
It was such a genuine grassroots protest against that too. It wasn't, you know, so many protests for good or ill are organised by a particular group, and you know that's the way they work. But this one really did seem to just come from people who weren't happy with the idea.
I'll tell you one thing: the government's explanation or justification that it was keyhole mining might not wash anymore for a whole lot
Absolutely,
of other reasons. That's great. Look, we're going to come back after the break and talk about the big international stories of the year.